animus for the many things she gave me. You all know the song. And we all had gifts of one sort or another from our parents, whether mother or father, whether adopted or biological, or what's the opposite of biological? Inorganic? I can't imagine. I am so aware on a holiday like today, and it is a holiday, and I'll talk a little bit about its origins at the end, of the great debt that I owe to my mother. Because without my mother, I'd be nothing, quite literally. Now, if I were a devout Hindu and some branches of Buddhist, that would be a good thing, to escape this veil of tears, this wheel of incarnation, and to just go and join the vastness. But since I'm not an Orthodox Buddhist or Hindu, I don't bitterly resent my mother for bringing me into this veil of tears, kicking and screaming. Though kicking and screaming, I entered this beautiful world, complaining bitterly at the time, apparently. My mother said at one famous Mother's Day when she shared the pulpit with me in Studio City that I was a perfect child, that I never gave her a moment's worry or sorrow or pain, and then I was born and everything changed. If you wonder where I get my humor, either credit or blame, and timing, it is from my mother. As I grow older, faster and faster with every passing week, month, year, and decade, I grow in my appreciation for what my mother and my father, what parents did for me. And the awesome responsibility of touching and shaping and attempting to mold new life. Whenever I do an infant dedication, one of the charges that I always make is, and it fits so nicely with Khalil Gibran, is you're going to try to mold the kids into carbon copies of yourselves, but, you know, you're going to fail and it's just going to annoy them and frustrate you, but you can't help but trying. The way that we truly mold is not by yelling and screaming or necessarily spanking. The way that we truly mold our children, our grandchildren, is by example. It's not what we say, it's what we do. And as we sang the second hymn today, this is the one that the first time we did it after my mother died completely blindsided me and I choked up and I started crying. And then I choked up a little bit last year, but I was ready this year and only just kind of caught in my throat. Because I don't think that you have any sense of what being a parent is until you become one, until that you have walked the last mile again and again and again at 2 o'clock in the morning with a croupy kid, until you have put your heart out there and your hopes out there and your love out there and all your vulnerability concentrated on the vulnerability of another human life. And when we're in the children's seat, it's easy to see the mistakes. It's harder to see and to appreciate just what those gifts that our parents give us by who they are, how they are, what they say, but more importantly, what they do. I'm so aware of the many gifts that I've gotten from my mother. Tremendous love of books, love of language, absolutely came from her. She was, some of my earliest memories are going to the library and her checking out all of these books and occasionally even returning them. And a picture of her reading them and it's in my head very, very clearly. A love of politics. My interest in politics clearly came from my mother. She was, and for tax purposes, this does not constitute an endorsement, but she was the president of the Brentwood Democratic Club. She was a member of the California Democratic Council. She was a Democratic National Committee woman, a committed delegates to Stevenson in two national conventions, and she just loved politics up until literally her dying day. The last time I spent with my mother was up in Marin County at my brother's house, and my brother was in Mexico, and I cooked dinner, and she got all dressed up, and I invited one of my old professors from Vienna and his wife over, and my old professor from Vienna, being an upper-class Englishman, was of course a Marxist, don't ask, and they were into left-wing politics with such passion and fervor and enthusiasm, and my mother's 92-year-old eyes were shining with enthusiasm for the process and a little bit of animus in terms of the incumbent. But that was okay, because George Bush kept my mother's blood pressure up and going. And I have him to thank, I'm sure, for two or three extra years of just staying alive to hope that karma would work out within her lifetime. That kind of passion and connection is certainly part of a legacy. I got from her a love of music. No talent, but a love of music. And as I said, her sense of humor and her, I apologize for this, her word play and how much she enjoyed all of those things. There are lots of values that we get from our parents, and they hand them down to us directly by telling us what they believe about civil rights, more importantly, how they act them, how they show up in terms of a demonstration. My mother was not simply a card-carrying political activist, but a placard-carrying political activist, and that's a very important role model to know that we do not live and die alone, concerned only for ourselves. She modeled that we are part of a larger world, and that's a very precious gift. She modeled certain kinds of religious values, and some of them about being religious without being a believer. My mother lit the Shabbos candles every Friday night and said the appropriate prayers without having a theology that needed to take those words literally. But she believed that in order to know who you are and in order to know where you want to go, it's important to know where and who you have been. Whatever your background, whatever your heritage, whatever your tradition, we all carry with us the stories of nations, of peoples, of tribes, and of family, and that's part of our precious legacy that we take, we question, eventually we may accept, and then we hand off to another generation. And so she quite literally taught me to take religion seriously without taking it literally, and to be open and tolerant and celebratory of everybody's religious tradition. Her model for me was the perfect training ground to become a Unitarian Universalist, maybe even to become a Unitarian Universalist minister. First of all, my aunt was married to someone who was Russian Orthodox. My uncle was married to someone who was only a Presbyterian, not very exotic. My cousin's married to a Muslim. My mother's second husband was a Roman Catholic. We had this wonderful diversity in our own home, and we had a diversity also of different races, whatever race means, but you know what I mean, in our own family. We were part of a large family that was not organized around one ethnicity, one religion, one set of traditions. She helped me become a minister, I guess, in that she got me entered into extemporaneous speaking contests when I was about 6 and 7 years old. So at an early age, I was trained to do a really good 5 minutes about subjects about which I knew nothing. There's no finer training for clergy, really. It was enough in those to be both organized and curious, but you didn't actually have to know anything. And I would like to join with Socrates in saying, I really don't know anything about the ultimate concerns. I know about their history. I know how different religions have worked. So I do have a body of knowledge. But what they really mean about knowing, I don't. I experience and I reflect. I got all of that from her. I also got an awful lot, and this is important for parents to remember. Children often learn and become better through rebellion. It's not simply when we listen to our parents that we grow. It's sometimes when we torture our parents that we grow. I am, if I may say so, a tremendously talented swimmer. I won a couple of races. Of course, I cheated. This was a butterfly race that was still the breaststroke, and I was the only one doing the butterfly before they separated them. But I won. I became a wonderful swimmer for a very simple reason. My mother was scared to death of the water, and anytime I went under the water, she held her breath, and so I learned how to hold my breath for up to 3 minutes. Just to make her crazy. And my theory was really good, except that I couldn't really watch her going crazy because I was underwater. But I did develop that ability, and she fed it with her anxiety. And it was, in a way, a gift. And in a way, so is performing. She entered me in contests, and I was doing public speaking at an age that was young enough that I didn't know you were supposed to be afraid. I thought only your parents were supposed to be afraid. And it was not until I sat down to write this sermon that I put together the connection with performing and with the swimming, that my mother had high anxiety in the beginning about seeing her baby up there performing. But after a while, it became natural to me, and she adjusted. And that was nice, too. But I think it's important that we understand the love and the molding that we do when we give our children, and eventually our grandchildren, a chance to rebel and revolt and to test their values. Because Socrates says that the unexamined life is not worth living. If we simply take and memorize our parents' values and not test them, they never become our own. They're only second hand. They become ours deep inside, their reasons and their motives, so that we don't have to think about it. We don't have to deal with guilt or I'm doing this just because I'm following orders, but I'm doing this because it is my value now because I have sat and doubted it and experimented with it, turned it upside down, looked at it from different angles, and now I understand it isn't force of habit. It has become me through both introspection and action. We don't grow up in a vacuum. We mustn't grow up in a vacuum. And I guess ultimately that greatest gift beside life, if anything can be said to be beside life, was modeling something very important all through the night and all through my life. And that was presence. When my wife and I were coming back from the Peace Corps in North Africa, having been gone for 2 years, the ship sailed into New York, and I turned to my wife and I said, my mother will be on the dock. And she said, no way. She'd warn you. She'd tell you. I said, my mother will be on the dock. My mother was on the dock. She said, surprised? And I said, no, but delighted. Because what we are is there for each other. The time counts. All the modern issues about quality time, and let's do that intensive, high-impact parenting thing, and I'm going to give you 5 of the best minutes you're going to have today. It is the everydayness of life where we learn about each other. When I do memorial services, which I do too frequently, what people talk about occasionally are the peak moments. the great family vacation, this indelible memory of joy. But what they really talk about is the pictures that we have in our heads of the people whom we have loved and who have loved us. As they sat in a chair reading, as they lit candles, as they celebrated the everydayness of life. Because that's where we live. We live from peak to peak, through valleys, certainly. And the valleys are important, too. I don't want to give a tremendous sentimental Mother's Day message here about Ashurbanipal, sainted mother, you know, she was an angel. My mother was often very difficult, and you can expect that to be the case because she had two very difficult sons who loved her and of whom she was proud. But it was always a roller coaster. There were those teen years that were somewhat difficult for me to relate to her and for her to relate to me. But when we're dealing in issues of love, it is showing up even when you're hurting. It's showing up with your arms and heart open even when you're angry. It isn't not being angry. It isn't not being hurt. It isn't not going and wanting to slam a door, maybe even slamming the door. But it is coming back through that door and knowing that there's a grown-up in the room and that grown-up's arms will be open. One last thing. Mother's Day does not have a sentimental origin and beginning. Mother's Day was not invented by the Hallmark greeting card company. I went yesterday to buy a Hallmark card in the Hallmark store, and I come up to the counter with the card, and the person at the register says, "Do you have a Hallmark card?" And I said, "Yeah, right here." And she looked at me, no, I mean a discount card. I said, "Oh, you really need to change the language on that." It wasn't invented by the florists or by the Hallmark people. It was invented by Universalist women as a statement of anti-war. It was a statement, literally, of the words, "We did not bring, at that time, our sons into this world to raise them and to nurture them in order to send them off to be slaughtered." It was something that originated in something, in a radical kind of love and connection. And it's a radical kind of love and connection that I know still exists in this world and still exists in our own families. During the Vietnam War, my mother said as lovingly as she could that she would take a baseball bat and hit my knee if I was became in danger of going into the military service. Now, I understand there may be people with a responsible opposing point of view about that, but that is how she manifests her sense of being a protective lioness. And it is out of that strength of women that Mother's Day is born. Not out of the cute little gray-haired woman in the back that you have to give the flower and the candy to. That's all very nice. But the story comes out of women affirming their strength, their love, their resoluteness, and the power of that love to make a difference in the world, a difference for their children, a difference for the world, and a difference for peace. I said in the beginning, when we're talking about values, it's important to know where we have been in order to know where we want to go. And it's important to know as parents, as celebrators of Mother's Day, where Mother's Day came from, what it has become, and where it can go again in the future in terms of the kind of active love and the kind of power that women and parents have to make a difference to their children, their grandchildren, and to the world. My appreciation has grown over a period of time, and I have become convicted of a great religious principle, and the principle that is that of karma. I didn't know anything about what my mother did or what my father did until I became a parent and walked the halls with a sick, croupy baby. I didn't know how hard it was to love in the bad times as well as the good times. I didn't know. And now, as I watch our children dealing with our grandchildren, I believe in karma. I believe in the circle of life and the cycle of life, and that it's really good to stay alive, to watch that, not to kibitz and to train and to interfere, but just to watch the children grow in their love, in their appreciation, and to still have our hands and hearts open and have a chance now, with a little bit less anxiety, to connect again to yet another generation. And this time, as fathers, as mothers, as grandfathers, as grandmothers, as aunts and uncles, this time to get that love out there, that time intense and real and enduring, and let go of just a little bit of the anxiety. And because now we also know that while life is a tenuous and fragile miracle, that these little kids trip and fall and skin their knees, but they're really pretty tough. And if we don't make them crazy, they probably won't be crazy. The power of love and the power of parenting, it is open to everyone, biological or the inorganic among us, to reach out to the next generation and the generation beyond that, to carry our values into the future through the example of what we do today.